From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Shanghai Composite Index down again today, way down. Wall Street on its own big ride lately, maybe in the other direction. And markets all over, tumbling, trying to find a bottom, maybe look for new opportunities. Maybe you've lost a bundle in the last few days. Maybe it seems like someone else's problem. But the markets are speaking to us. What are they saying? This hour on Point, the message in the markets from China to Wall Street. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you freaking out, buying in, running scared, just watching? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Yesterday, all kinds of woe out of China. Here was CNBC's Sri Shagaraja yesterday on a big sell-off in Asian stocks.
They're calling it Black Monday, and it's not me. This is coming from the official Chinese state media. So Beijing even isn't putting a gloss on all of this. 8.5% at the settlement. So this is the biggest one-day percentage loss since the global financial crisis, since February the 27th, 2007, to be exact.
Did it freak Wall Street? Yes, it did. Here was Eugene Bellingcroft talking with NPR reporter Joel Rose yesterday.
China gives bad numbers, so the perception that the economy is slowing down, there's a fear that, you know, everything's going to go down. So that's why the fear rules today.
Today, maybe a little calmer in New York. Here was Rebecca Patterson at Bessemer Trust on CNBC this morning.
What we told our clients yesterday morning was stay invested, enjoy the end of your summer. We think this is a correction, not the beginning of Armageddon.
Not the beginning of Armageddon. Joining me first today from New York is Dan Strumpf. Dan covers financial markets for The Wall Street Journal, has been watching the global markets closely. Dan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
So yesterday, 1,000 points down, biggest number drop ever in the opening bit there on Wall Street today. The start looked quite different.
Yeah, definitely a big reversal today. I mean, yesterday was just it was an unbelievable day. As you mentioned, there was that 1,000-point drop in the Dow, which, by the way, is the biggest one-day drop ever in that index. Of course, the end of the day, things looked better. They didn't look good, but you know, the Dow ended with a loss of about 500-600 points. So it was really a wild ride. I think a lot of people are sort of very eager to call a bottom, and you can see that in the trading activity today. You really could see it yesterday, just how hard the market bounced off that 1,000-point loss. But that 1,000-point loss really did rattle a lot of people's nerves, and many people are still kind of scratching their heads over exactly what happened there.
The Shanghai Composite down 8% yesterday, down 7% again today. How can China be continuing this real swoon, just plummet, and Wall Street saying, well, maybe not, maybe we won't go down there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's a real divergence, at least happening today, between those two markets. China's stock market is sort of an interesting animal in that it's kind of an island unto itself in many ways. It doesn't have a lot of foreign participation from sort of big name asset managers and investors and hedge funds that sort of dominate global trading in the U.S. and elsewhere in the developed world. It's very much owned by domestic Chinese retail investors who have plowed into the market in the last couple of years, in many cases with borrowed money, using leverage, using margin, that kind of all fueled this dizzying rally in that market up until mid-year, of course, when things started to go the other way. So in many ways, it's its own market. People are of course watching it. They're frightened by the drop. But it is its own sort of animal in many ways.
How do you read this? How do investors read it? Is it all emotion? When you see 1,000 down, people get pretty fraught. Is there an analytical case that these drops are necessary? That they could go down further, even a lot further? Is there, what about full on recession risk out there?
Well, you know, just to sort of give some context, I mean, people have been sort of very eager for some time for some kind of market correction out there, and a correction being a big pullback in the market. Of course, nobody likes to see that, but there's sort of been calls out there for a while for that, because we've had this basically uninterrupted 6-year bull market in the U.S. ever since the 2009 depths of the financial crisis. The stock market has been on a tear, and this year The up until a couple of days ago, the market had basically paused, and then now we have this big drop that we've seen. So you know, there's a lot of people out there sort of calling this a healthy thing, and many people sort of looking to step in when they can and buy bargains. But there's definitely a sort of sense that we were due for a while for something like this, especially given sort of high valuations in the market and a lot of other factors out there.
We don't know where the Dow and the Wall Street will end up today, but can China and New York go in opposite directions in terms of market? Can they keep that up?
I think it can. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, there's a sort of sense that China's market is very much an island unto itself. Many big investors don't participate in that market. And in many ways, you know, the U.S. market is driven by fundamentals in the U.S., which are actually looking okay. Not great, but okay. So, you know, most investors are sort of thinking about it in this way. You know, economic growth in the U.S. is recovering. It's not amazing, but, you know, maybe about 2% growth this year is kind of the consensus expectation. The jobs market is picking up. Interest rates are still basically near 0% right now and could stay that way for a long time. And you know, 0% interest rates are a good thing for asset prices, for stocks. So the backdrop here is looking okay. The backdrop in Europe is improving. I mean, finally, you know, much of Europe is pulling itself out of recession. The situation in Greece is on the mend. So in the developed world, things are largely seen to be as okay, as not great, but okay. And so, you know, I think that people are sort of thinking about that when they look at the market. And, you know, you're seeing that again in this huge rally today. That I think that psychology is kind of what's driving a lot of the action today.
We'll see where that rally goes. Dan Strumpf with The Wall Street Journal, covering the market out of New York. Thanks so much for being with us, Dan.
Thank you, Tom.
And we will talk with an investment advisor later in this hour about maybe if you're in the market, if you care to play in the market, where that money ought to go right now. On NBC's MSNBC's Morning Joe this morning, Financial Times managing editor Gillian Tett said she expected the U.S. stock market to come back a bit.
Here's the good news. They called yesterday Black Monday because the share price movement was just crazy. Today in Europe, they're calling it Turnabout Tuesday because actually the European stock markets have bounced back. And if you look at how S&P 500 futures are trading right now, it suggests that actually we're going to see the Dow and the S&P 500 actually rebound a bit today.
In China, it was not a rebound day, and the pain, very real. The BBC's Celia Hatton talked with Chinese investors, reported on how they're feeling, their worry and frustration with the Shanghai stock market and beyond.
We're seeing a lot of pain, frankly, on China's online forums, particularly Weibo. That's China's version of Twitter. Many people have logged in to say, look, I can't even look at what's happening in the stock market. It makes me feel sick to look at it. We had one woman who said, you know, China, please save my money.
Of course, it's hard to know what's going on in China sometimes. Reports that search results related to the stock market fall have been blocked on China's top search engine, Baidu, and the micro-blogging platform there, Weibo. The free flow of information, not exactly what China is famed for. We want to dive on in here, look at what's going on. With me from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is Anusha Chari, economics professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Anusha Chari, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on your show again.
It's great to have you here. And from China, from Beijing, China, Ishwar Prasad joins us, professor of trade policy at Cornell University. Ishwar, thank you very much for joining us again, and this time from China, where all the action is. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Pleasure as always, although every time you and I talk, there seems to be trouble brewing somewhere, and I'm certainly in the middle of some of it.
What's the mood in China, in Beijing today? There's been a lot of talk about all of this demonstrating that the Chinese government, famous for its control, has found something finally that it cannot control.
Well, it's a clear and warm night here in Beijing, but there's a lot of drama out here. Just a couple of hours ago, China's central bank, the People's Bank of China, took a couple of very important steps. It cut the interest rate on bank deposits and loans, and it also reduced the reserve ratio on banks, that is the amount of cash they're expected to hold at the central bank in reserve. So this is likely to free up a fair bit of credit in the economy. So it's clear that the Chinese government has recognized that it's time to step up and try to take some action to shore up the stock market and stabilize the economy. The big question is whether these moves are going to get any traction. With slipping confidence and declining growth momentum, that's a real question out there now.
Anusha, do you see just a correction here, which people are taking comfort in that idea? Or who knows exactly what's going on with China behind the official numbers? Are we dancing along the possibility of a real recession here?
So are we talking about the U.S. or China?
Well, that you tell me, because...
Okay, so yes. So I think there are sort of different sort of ideas as far as China and what's happening with the Chinese economy is concerned, and sort of the implications for the U.S., I sort of see them as being slightly different. As far as the U.S. is concerned, I think that this is sort of, you know, just short-term volatility. The fundamentals are looking great. The job situation, you know, unemployment, the rate is down to 5.3%. Inflation is down. Largely in part because of commodity prices being down, oil prices being down, house prices are recovering. Banks are well capitalized, corporations are hiring, and household balance sheets have sort of largely recovered from the sort of the bloodbath that took place in the aftermath of the global financial crisis. So as far as the U.S. is concerned, I think fundamentals are looking good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the message from global stock markets from Beijing to all over to New York City, Wall Street. Anusha Chari is with us from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Ishwar Prasad is with us from Cornell. He's in Beijing, China, as we speak. And, of course, a lot of the action has been right there. The uncertainty came right to the United States and all over the place yesterday. Here was Jim Cramer, always has something to say.
Is this the big one? I don't know. Well, it's certainly noticeable. What am I going to do? I'm going to wait for the super-de-duper big one?
After a 1,000-point drop, we're talking super-de-duper. Today, maybe some rally there. But in Beijing, here's a Chinese investor telling CNN he's finished with investing after watching his money disappear.
Mr. Yang, who didn't give his first name, says he lost 30% of his investment in a single day. He says he's lost confidence in the market, suffering two huge losses in less than 2 months.
And what can, will China do about it? Not clear right now. Here's Austin Goolsbee, who was chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors earlier in the Obama administration. I talked with NPR yesterday, said the Chinese government meddles too much in their markets.
The government just starts intervening and buying up stocks and telling people nothing to look at here. We're not slowing down faster than we said before. Just pay no attention to what's happening. And as the government buys up the stocks, you just can't tell. The market's trying to tell them they don't think this stuff is worth what it was 3 months ago, but they don't want to take that price signal.
A quick call here from one investor in San Antonio, Texas. Adam, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Which way are you headed, for the doors or back in?
So I pulled over to the side of the road yesterday on my way to work, and I picked up a couple stocks that I follow closely. And I got them for a great bargain, and I've already got, you know, I've made 10%. I mean, I know it's only one day, but I've already made money on those stocks. And so my question for the commentators is, you know, I'm a pretty average investor. I stick to stuff that I know. And so if I was one of the guys buying yesterday, who were some of the suckers that were selling yesterday at record lows?
Adam, let us pick it up. Ishwar Prasad, you're in Beijing hearing that. There's a rebound talk on Wall Street today, but there was a lot of selling yesterday. Was it suckers selling? Should U.S. investors be white-knuckle concerned about China's economy?
Well, it's normal people struck by fear, given that they've seen the stock market take plunges earlier, and you never know when things are going to go further south. And I think it's fear driven by three factors, Tom. It's fear about China slowing and the emerging markets also slowing more broadly. Among the advanced economies, other than the U.S., there aren't many signs of strength. The second fear is that policymakers are really running out of options to stoke economic growth. And the third is, of course, some uncertainty about when the Fed will start hiking interest rates, which could cause further turbulence in other markets around the world. So this very toxic mix of fear and uncertainty means that those with very strong bellies or those who can afford to ride it out are still in the market or probably getting in. But it is certainly a scary time. And I think it's not so much suckers, it's just people who are quite concerned, given that they've lived through a very difficult and painful crisis where they saw the value of their investments fall very sharply. So I think it's a natural human reaction.
Ishwar, you're in China now as we speak. You said China looks prepared to step up. But much of the world has already been kind of amazed at how they've, quote unquote, stepped up already, poured hundreds of billions of dollars into their stock market, buying directly, have forbidden investors there for getting out for a time or tried to. I mean, it would look from outside, Ishwar, like China has gone, you know, bent itself in pretzels, stepping up, trying to what looks like artificially keep the market high with very big steps for a long time here already.
There's a really interesting tussle going on here, in my view, Tom, in the minds of policymakers, because they want the market at some level to discipline itself. But at the same time, they know that if there is too much volatility in markets, and that's a natural thing in market-oriented economies, yep, then that's going to take away support for the economic reforms that they're really keen to put in place. And they are continuing with some very modest reforms, like freeing up the interest rate structure, freeing up the exchange rate so they can be more market determined. But the problem is that they don't have a good communication strategy, so people don't know exactly what they're up to. And they don't have a good framework for these reforms. They don't have independent central bank. They don't have a good corporate governance structure. So all the good intentions end up creating a lot of volatility and don't have a good benefit-to-cost ratio. But I think their hearts are in the right place. The problem is that once you start intervening, it becomes very difficult to pull back. And right now, I think on the street, there is a real question about the economic management skills of the Chinese leadership. So they're trying to manage this very, very fine balance between letting the market operate as it may and dealing with the very large volatility that sometimes implies.
Sounds like a mind-boggling challenge. We'll look at those reforms. But Anush Achari, first, let's get back to you on China and recession. Do you see a real risk there? We're used to China being, a sort of unending growth engine. What about now? What about in the period ahead? Anusha?
Hello. I do see that there is a vulnerability there, which could be potentially quite serious. And that the reason for that is that for years, China grew by sort of investing more and having a very export-heavy, export-dependent growth strategy. Now, the official government development policy stance has sort of changed, and what the Chinese government, the officially stated policy, is to try and rebalance in favor of more consumption or consumer demand. And so the question really is, can this structural change be managed in an orderly fashion by the Chinese government, or are we in for a hard landing? So that is the real concern. So when we sort of think from the perspective of the U.S. consumer, on the face of it, mm-hmm, devaluation by itself is going to make Chinese exports cheaper, and a slowdown in Chinese demand also lowers commodity prices, which is again good for the U.S. consumer. But what I'm concerned about is this devaluation a distress signal about sort of the underlying vulnerability in the Chinese economy, and that is really worrisome. So the other sort of thing is sort of the indirect indicators of what the real growth picture is. And I think here, transparency from the Chinese government is really the key issue. And what we see is that, you know, the IRS used to be worried that there were these pizza parlors that said they weren't selling too many pizzas, and then they had to resort to looking at the bags of flour and pizza boxes that these pizzerias were buying.
To get the real data. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so if you look at sort of indirect indicators, what we see is that electricity production is flat. So, you know, is the economy really growing at 7% if electricity usage is flat? Rail freight volumes have fallen by 11%, which means that goods really aren't being shipped around. And I've seen some worrisome estimates that say that GDP growth is closer to 3.1% rather than 7%. So if you know, we we don't have sort of, there's this opacity in terms of both the stock market and the economy that is sort of worrisome, because we have to remember that China's continuing growth helped limit the impact of the global recession of 2009. So, you know, growth in emerging markets, largely led by China, provided a counterpoint to what was happening in the U.S. And now, you know, the fears are really increasing that the world's second biggest economy could the next sort of global recession. We already see the effects in other emerging markets. And we have to remember that when we live in this very interconnected world, China's growth slowing down is going to have spillover effects from people they buy commodities from. So, you know, commodity exporting nations or commodity producers.
Just ask Brazil or the Saudis, or you go on right on down the list, Australia, you name it.
Exactly, exactly. And so when China was growing fast, you know, it had very positive spillovers for these countries. We saw these, you know, boom time in emerging markets. And at the same time, we also have to think about from the perspective of American companies, it's still hard, you know, a little early to tell, but what does it mean for, you know, people, American companies that are selling to the Chinese middle class or the Chinese market or to emerging markets? So, you know, those are some of the fears which, you know, to sort of, Ishwar brought this up a little bit earlier, what we have is also this in the backdrop is this imminent rate hike by the Fed in September. And if that was to go through, we've already seen that, you know, leading up to it, all this capital has been flowing out of emerging markets as investors have been preparing for the higher U.S. interest rates. And that's sort of creating further sort of volatility in the situation. And so is this, you know, the Chinese situation, is it a cause for concern? Yes. Is it a cause for panic? No. Does this mean that we should really try and understand what's going on in China? And hopefully in a more transparent way, that would definitely be helpful in my view.
Concern, yes. Panic, no. Sounds like the theme of the day. Mike in Detroit. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, Tom, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to point out, I heard some comments, China's economy. What China's experiencing is a good old-fashioned capitalist stock market panic. I mean, we have them, the world has them, and that's what happens in capitalism. And, you know, the Chinese government being communist, they don't know how to deal with it. They're trying to, fund it, trying to provide liquidity by buying up stock that's just crazy. It doesn't work. You can see it doesn't work. And my second comment was that the our economy is very, I don't think it's very affected by this. We sell such a small amount of product to China, and, it doesn't really affect us. And yesterday it was a buying opportunity for us here. And for all your listeners out there, when you see those dramatic swings on that, those are your cues. Bye.
Mike, let's test that thesis, if we may. Ishwar Prasad in Beijing. Mark says, this is an opportunity. But Anusha says, China says they've still got 7% growth, but maybe it's 3.1% in China. 3% growth is a fiasco. Now, that's not the official number, but who knows what the real number is. Imagine that China's growth was getting down that slow. Does that make a real substantive problem for the United States, Ishwar? Could the United States keep on chugging if China's actual real economy really swoons down into that kind of number?
Actually, Tom, let me start with a useful sense of perspective that Mark was trying to bring to the discussion. I think, as he points out, the stock market in China is important, but it's not that important in China because it accounts for about a third of GDP, and which is much less than in the U.S., for instance, where it's well over 100% of GDP.
Fair enough, but we'll put that aside and look at real growth. What if it's really significantly down?
If growth is really around 3-4%, that's going to be a huge blow, not just for China, but for the world economy. As Anusha pointed out, China is now a very important, it's been the main driver of global GDP growth since the financial crisis. Last year, it accounted for about a third of world growth. So if China is really slowing down that much, it's a problem. My sense is that while there is a loss of growth momentum in China, This economy is still capable of generating 6 to 7% growth fairly easily this year and next. But the big question is how they do it. If they go back to the old playbook, as they seem to be doing based on the move today, of using a credit-fueled investment binge in order to support growth, that's not good for China in the long run, because it'll create even more excess capacity in industries where there is already excess capacity, and then China will have to export that excess capacity out, and it's going to cause stresses in the financial system. And that's not going to be good for the world economy as well, because China will not have balanced growth. But here again, I sense a real tension among Chinese policymakers. What they're trying to do is a minimum in terms of supporting growth while trying to proceed at a very tortoise-like pace in terms of their economic reform. So their hearts are in the right place, but the slowing growth momentum is affecting the economic space as well as the political support for reforms. And that, I think, is the much bigger concern for China and the world economy. If in the next 2 years China continues to generate 6 to 7% growth, but does it through investment and without the reforms in place, that's going to put the whole world economy in a pretty bad spot down the road.
Could be a long tail on the dog that's been barking in the last couple of days here. David in Boston. David, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah.
One brief comment. I think the Chinese playbook is the American playbook. It was almost 7 years ago to the day that American central planners orchestrated their own massive direct bailout of the economy because they, as Austin Goolsbee said, could not stomach the pain.
Yeah.
So we bailed out Fannie, Freddie, AIG. We forced the sale of Bear Stearns. We forced the banks to accept $10 or $20 billion each in TARP money. We started buying up junk paper. So I think that, you know, they have learned from the best. And our central planners are widely applauded and hailed as the saviors of the global economy for that reason. So why shouldn't the Chinese believe that in retrospect, they'll be applauded as well?
That's in, and then not to mention QE1 and QE2, quantitative easing and all that liquidity that Washington and the Fed have pushed out there. Anush Achari, what about it? Is it fair to say, hey, it's all the same? The U.S. intervened when its economy was in real trouble. China has intervened. No big difference.
I do think there's a significant difference between the two economies, largely because of, you know, the U.S. is a market economy. China is an economy in transition from state control to a market economy.
But when the chips were down, as our caller Dave points out, Washington got pretty involved.
Yes, but it got involved in a time when it was a very extreme event and the government needed to step in. But this is not sort of business as usual as far as the American government is concerned. What I worry about with China is that given the sort of lack of experience with a true market economy, that this is sort of seen as a way of trying to prop up the stock market by telling state-owned firms to buy stocks, telling large investors not to sell stocks. They have these rules about if the stock price goes up or down by 10%, a company can suspend trading. And I saw some number where 800 out of the 1,100 companies on the Shanghai Stock Exchange have sort of suspended trading. So this is trading. So this is really not a way to do business and a sustained way to run a stock market. And that is sort of my concern with the Chinese government and their stock market.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the message from global stock markets, from Beijing and Shanghai to all over, to NYC, Wall Street. Ishwar Prasad is with us out of Cornell University, joining us today from Beijing in China. He's been watching up close as China wrestles with all of its stock market fluctuation. And, of course, the direction has been sharply, sharply down day after day there. Anush Chari joins us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, University of North Carolina there. She watches the whole world economy. Donald Trump posting a video on Instagram yesterday in response to the fall in the Chinese market. They've been taking us to the cleaners.
I've been telling everybody for a long time, China's taking our jobs, they're taking our money. Be careful, they'll bring us down. You have to know what you're doing. We have nobody that has a clue.
Well, maybe, maybe not. Fed's been looking at finally putting interest rates up a little bit after they've sat at zero for year after year to help the U.S. get out of recession. Former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers talked with NPR's Steve Inskeep this morning, saying now is not the time for the U.S., the Fed, to raise interest rates.
Months ago, I said the Fed should not raise inflation, raise rates until it sees the whites of the eyes of inflation. And I don't think they're there yet.
He doesn't see it. And, of course, a lot of people are going to be watching. We've got listeners online saying, here's Bill, says, U.S. is an island of stability. Really? Look, see what happens with the recovery when interest rates do finally rise. Ishwar Prasad, would you have the nerve to pump up interest rates in the U.S. A month from now if you were Janet Yellen?
Now, here's the interesting position that the U.S. is in. Right now, there is panic and turmoil in much of the world economy. And when there is panic in financial markets, one thing has happened consistently since the financial crisis, which is that money looks for a safe haven. And the U.S. remains the ultimate safe haven. And in fact, we've already seen money coming into the U.S. Treasury bond market, and the yield on the 10-year treasuries is dropping. So in fact, I think the Fed can have it both ways. If it were to raise short-term interest rates now, that would signal that the Fed was aggressively getting ahead of any possibility of rising inflation, or more importantly, asset market bubbles building up, because there have been concerns that easy money is fueling some asset bubbles. But the Fed can have it for cheap, because if money comes into the long end of the treasury bond market, the long-term interest rates, which are what determine our mortgage rates, auto loan rates, and many other consumer loans, those are not going to be affected very much, if at all. So in that sense, the Fed can raise short-term policy rates to show that it's ahead of the curve without hurting the economy very significantly. So I think there is a good call for the Fed to move. And I think what's happening in China isn't probably enough to deter the Fed unless there is a string of bad news. And for much of the world, I think the uncertainty from the timing of the Fed's actions is a bigger problem right now. So as many policymakers around the world have said, let's get on with it. Once the first move is done, perhaps there'll be less uncertainty, at least coming from the Fed.
Let's get some investment advice right here at this very very fraught moment in global markets. By the way, if you're listening on podcast, we are so happy to have you. You can get in the conversation at our website, onpointradio.org. Join in right there. We're always happy to hear from you. With us right now from Memphis, Tennessee, is David Waddell. He's CEO, Senior Investment Strategist at Waddell & Associates, a wealth management firm there. David Waddell in Memphis, thanks so much for being with us today. What are you telling your clients right now about which way to turn?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at our firm, we spend a lot of time doing, and hello, Tom, thank you for having me, but we
great
spend
time.
A lot of time doing financial planning work, right? And I think people need to go back to having a longer-term perspective on their household finances. I think people get whipped around by what they see on TV and hear in the media, and the reality is the wiggles in the stock market on an intraday basis have almost no bearing on your long-term financial plan.
So 1,000 points, a wiggle, sir?
Well, I'm telling you, it really doesn't. So let's just stretch things out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been a 20-year period in the stock market where returns have been negative. The best annual returns in a 20-year period have been 18%. The worst have been 6%. So for most of us, we're trying to educate kids, or we're trying to plan for retirement, or we're taking care of, you know, aging parents. Our time horizon is not a day, it's not a week, it's not a month. And in fact, most people, specifically those nearing retirement, might have some bonds in their portfolio, and there's never been a 10-year period when a 50-50 bond equity portfolio has been negative. So for long-term investors, and I think this is important, for long-term investors, it is our responsibility to take advantage of some of the crazy volatility that's injected in the market by short-term investors, and more specifically by machines.
Okay, so that gets down to it. So what does that mean in terms of taking advantage of what's been unfolding in the last couple of days?
Okay, so your caller who called in and bought one of the bank stocks or something when the market opened down 1,200 points kind of got it right. So I'll give you an example. In 2010, there was a 16% pullback. Now we're dealing with a 10% pullback right now. And the market ended the year up 13%. In 2011, we had, you know, a problem with a ratings decline in the U.S. Treasury market. The market fell 20%, and by the end of the year, it was up 2%. So we see these pullbacks on average, a 10% pullback on average, going back to 1950, once a year.
So that's the sit-tight advice right there. But what if for people who really want to get savvy, what are you fishing for today that might even get you ahead of that, you know, decent return by the end of the year on the basis of coming in? We've got a lot of buyers coming back into Wall Street earlier this morning.
Well, that's a much more fun question, Tom. So if you look at today's action, it's a kind of a tepid rebound. You know, the futures were set up for a 600-point advance or so, and now we're up 2% or so. What's interesting to me is Germany is still holding a 4.5% gain. So China's down 40%. Europe is down 20%.
40%. That's just wild to think about
that
number.
From the top.
Yeah, okay. From wherever. Yeah.
Yeah, here's the irony is that the Dow is actually down, you know, double digits on the year, in the Chinese stock market, if you just look at it year-to-date, is flat. Yeah. So we're down 40% from the high. The German stock market is down 22% from the high. The U.S. stock market's down about 10% from the high. So you're seeing a little bit more of a bounce today in Europe, which entered selling territory before we did. You're seeing a bounce in technology, which would be expected. You know, small cap U.S. stocks have less international exposure. So we're fishing around in looking at smaller cap financial stocks, for instance. So housing statistics in the U.S. came out today, and the value of your house, congratulations, Tom, went up 5% year over year.
Maybe, yeah.
And so the U.S. economic picture in your local community is actually pretty good. I had a client who called me yesterday, freaked out by what was going on in China, and we talked about that, and then he asked me if he should buy more real estate in Nashville. And I said, well, if you think the world's collapsing, then why are you considering buying more real estate in Nashville? And he said, because it's going up. So if you can get more localized with your portfolio, that's a trend that you might want to consider expressing here.
Anoush Acharya, when you hear that kind of advice from David, who sounds like a savvy advisor, sometimes I wonder if it's hellish to be an economist because you've got to take that advice and put it into your great big analysis machine. Would you have the nerve to get back in, Anoush, if you're as an investor, or are you just to sit tight and forget about it?
I would definitely sit tight and not sort of rebalance at this point. Just wait for this volatility to subside. But I do think it's a good time to get into the stock market, you know, maybe not this week, but, you know, in the near future, because especially with the U.S. economy, I think, you know, the health is just improving, and one hopes that it's just going to be a sustained recovery rather than, you know, the fits and starts that we've seen. And I completely agree with this view that, you know, the real estate market is sort of coming back. You know, do you want to sort of, I sort of have, I'm somebody who's always sort of just advised having a well-diversified portfolio. Maybe reducing some international exposure at the moment might be wise, but, you know, if you have a well-diversified portfolio that you're going to, you're sort of, you don't need it tomorrow, but you're planning for retirement or planning for your kids' college education, I would just sort of continue with that and not panic and just sort of stay in.
Yeah, if I may, what about Paul Krugman's analysis? He's got a Nobel Prize in economics, and he's saying that we've got something more fundamental amiss here, that we have too much money globally chasing too few investment opportunities. And that keeps creating bubbles that blow up all over the place. He's warning about excess savings and persistent global weakness as the new normal. What about that analysis, Anoush?
So I do think that one sort of cause for concern, and that's why I was sort of talking about, you know, the Chinese, you know, is this, what does this portend for the world economy? What we see is that there has been other than the U.S., which I see as a beacon in the world economy, Europe's recovery has been very gradual and slow. It sort of seems like they're pulling through as the Greek situation stabilizes. But the question really is, will the gradual recovery taking shape in the advanced economy economies, can this weather this what we expect will be a prolonged period of weaker growth in a number of major emerging markets, led by China? So I really do think that that is sort of an underlying vulnerability, and maybe returns won't be so high as they have been in sort of the boom that we saw in emerging markets or the boom that we saw leading up to the global financial crisis. But I completely agree with the assessment that if you're sort of in the stock market for a very long period of time, consistently, you can expect to get positive returns.
Ishwa Prasad in Beijing, what about a turmoil scenario there? I mean, this is a big deal moment for China. It wants to have control. That's kind of the essence of the Communist Party and its long rule there. And yet, markets mean giving up some control. What if they stumble more? Is there the possibility of economic or political turmoil in China?
There's certainly a big risk here, and that fine line between maintaining stability and control and allowing the market a freer hand, which often means more volatility, is a key issue. But going back to this point that Anusha made, if one thinks about what it is that is driving such extreme volatility in the stock market, which got completely disconnected from the real economy last year. I mean, from August to August 2014 to January 2015, the stock market went up by more than 100%. And that was because ultimately you don't have good corporate governance, you don't have good accounting and auditing standards. And all of that means that it's very difficult for investors to get a good feel for the companies they're investing in. So they just go along for the ride and assume that the government will support things and not let them lose their shirts. And this time the government is trying very hard to instill market discipline, to tell investors that if you put your money in a bank without paying attention to that bank's balance sheet, or if you put your money in the stock market and invest in companies without paying attention to those companies' financials, then you're going to get burned if things turn sour and we, the government, will not back you up. But that's not an easy lesson to teach to a population that has been used to the government stepping in and making sure that they control and manage things. So it's going to be a transition period where there could be a good deal of economic and political turmoil. But the government seems reasonably committed to reform. So at least on that front, I'm hopeful.
Hang on to that mandate of heaven. Ken in Ticonderoga, New York. Ken, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
The Chinese missed the big yellow and black warning sign, danger, sharp learning curve up ahead. They just had a Bernie Madoff moment. They found out everything doesn't go up forever. And there you go.
I mean, they tried. They poured a lot into making it go up and up. As Ishwar says out of Beijing, 100% in just a matter of months. What's your strategy now, Ken? What are you up to?
All my money's in creating jobs in the craft brewing and distillation industry in the Adirondacks.
That's keeping it local. And how's it look?
I had a couple of angels die on me. I'm upside down. I'm out $100,000, but I'm right on the edge of success. So we're close.
As long as people keep drinking good beer, you've got your shot at it. Ken, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much for that. Let me get Denise, who's calling from Warwick, Rhode Island. Denise, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Denise. You're on. What's up?
Okay, sorry. All right. What about the perspective for retired investors that are living pretty much on a fixed income? Perhaps, you know, some of their money is invested in stocks, but you're looking at the long-term investor from what you've said so far. I just wonder if you could have something to say for somebody who's retired.
We'll take it right to David Waddell. David, what about it? The long-term horizon may not be where Denise wants to look here. What about retirees who it matters right now what's happening?
Well, it's interesting. So over the last 10 years, which has been a tumultuous period, stock markets actually appreciated 8% a year or so. So you'd be surprised, you know, as you elongate your time periods that prosperity finds a way. I mean, that is, as humans, what we really are seeking. The right question to ask if you're a retiree is what's your required rate of return? You know, you need to go through an exercise of what are my assets and what are my debts and what do I need to live on? And so what's my sustainable withdrawal rate, which is typically about 4-5%. And so in a low inflation environment with the Fed taking rates to zero, unfortunately, bonds aren't yielding all that much. And for that reason, they've pushed people to take on more risk, which was deliberate. And so the government is, and the Federal Reserve, I should say, is supportive of the stock market. So take this as an example. There's turmoil in China, and so now the U.S. Fed is considering not raising rates. Well, they're not perhaps raising rates because the stock market went down. So you've got so much intervention from the central banks around the world, and they all seem to be committed to escalating asset prices. So I'm not sure I'd throw the towel in on the intermediate mid-range return profile of the stock market. I think, you know, have the right asset allocation, spread things around, be diversified, and turn off your television.
It's a little bit funny, Denise, there, David reminding us it's not only Beijing where the government looks out for its markets when and if it can. Watch what the Fed does and does not do. David Waddell at Waddell & Associates in Memphis. Wonderful to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us, David.
Great being here, Tom.
Ishwar Prasad in Beijing, China, out of Cornell University. Ishwar, always great speaking with you. Thanks for joining us from China today.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
And Anusha Chari at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. You're terrific. Thank you, Anusha.
Thank you for having me, Tom. It was great.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.